This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. And also Greens Plus. Greens Plus for health. This is the FitCast. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Girardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
Can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show? Just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. FitCast's lucky number episode 13 for July 9th, 2006. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And this is John Williams, and this week we're joined by Cassandra Forsyth. Cassandra has advanced degrees in food science, human nutrition, and metabolism, and she's currently working on a PhD in kinesiology at the University of Connecticut. Welcome to the show, Cass.
Thank you very much, John and Kevin. I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've had several requests on the forums for a woman's perspective, particularly from you. So, we are so happy to hear that you could come on the show. And you've been going through a move, I hear, recently, so it wasn't that easy to get to a computer.
No, I'm at my boyfriend's computer right now. My computer is still not hooked up, and I don't know how to get the internet connected at my new place. But this works well. I get to hang out at my boyfriend's house, so it's good.
Yeah, I'm glad you have a headset, too. When people call in, it sort of ruins the quality of their voice, so sounds good.
Well, this headset's fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
For sure. Well, Kevin, you want to summarize the FitCast news?
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple things to go over. First off, everyone might notice the new thefitcast.com website design. I fixed it so that everyone that has Internet Explorer can access it. And also now we have certain tabs for the articles, FitCast pictures, and also we have a FitCast store. And the next part of our FitCast news is actually a FitCast newsletter, which is pretty big. I know I promised it a couple weeks ago, but it took me a while to shop around and find a program that would work well with the website. But we got it going, and we got about 100 people that have subscribed so far. And if you haven't done so yet, just go to thefitcast.com, and you can click on the link, just put in your name and your email address, and you're good to go. The FitCast newsletter will cover just weekly news of the FitCast, when new episodes come out, if there's any special interviews, any contests, any giveaways, like any even coupons that we might offer that will be good towards sites like Greens Plus, and also deals that might be associated with any of our sponsors like Turbulence Training. So definitely sign up for that and have a chance to win some free stuff, you know.
The new site looks awesome, Kevin. I can tell you put some work into it.
I just had to sit down and get it done because I knew if I did it piece by piece, it wasn't going to look that good. But I just took a couple hours on a day off of work and just got it done. But it looks really good. Everyone should go check it out, and I'm sure you won't be disappointed. We got the pictures of Eric Cressy up there wearing his FitCast t-shirt, and this brings us into our next piece for the FitCast news, which is I just ordered about 15 FitCast t-shirts, which are going out to all the winners for the previous contest. Also, I'm sending a couple to our previous guests that we've had on the show, and Cassandra will get you one as well.
Oh, I'll send in my picture with it, too.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. We're going to have a nice photo album of all the guests that have come on and all the FitCast winners, so definitely keep a lookout for that.
Yeah, and the people who won the hard copy of Gourmet Nutrition, I had a problem printing those out, but they are on their way. So sorry for the delay. It's been a week now, but I'll get them in the mail early next week.
And I should have the FitCast t-shirts probably in a week from probably by the next weekend, and then they'll probably take 3 or 4 days to get you, depending on where you live. And if you're across seas, obviously it's going to take a week or two. Our next piece of news is actually a very exciting and happy piece of news, and that's Alan Cosgrove is basically back with us. He's back home, and he's going to be coming on the FitCast soon.
And if excellent.
And if you know Alan, he's a fighter, and he's the man, and I'm very excited to hear that he's offered to come on the show and join us.
It's like double great news, you know?
Yeah.
I'm so happy to hear that he's out of the hospital and feeling better, and plus he's coming on the show, you know? I couldn't be happier.
And he just had a move, too.
Oh, did he?
He was telling me, it's like only an idiot that schedules a move and a stem cell transplant at the same time.
Nice.
But that's what he did.
We have no room to complain then. You know, I was like, oh, it sucks living in a new house where everything's torn up and moving. Mm-hmm. I got nothing to complain about.
No, not at all. No, he's doing great.
Excellent.
Also, Bill Hartman is going to be coming back on the show with Mike Robertson in, I think, 1 or 2 weeks to talk about their new DVD that's coming out. So we're going to have two guests in one week, which should be pretty interesting with four of us chatting along, and we'll see how crazy it will get, especially with Bill. I know he can get somewhat hilarious, so look forward to that. I've never talked to Mike before, so it'll be interesting to talk to Mike as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too.
And the last piece I just have to bring up quickly is Eric Cressy's new off-season training manual is now out. So you should head over to ericcressy.com and check that out. Everyone who's picked it up so far is saying nothing but great things about it. And mine should be coming in the mail in probably 5 or 6 days. So,
yeah, it looks awesome. And on JP Fitness forums, he has sort of a sneak preview. I think he has the outline and maybe the introduction on there. So it's a good read, and gives you a good idea of what else is in the book.
Definitely.
Yeah, Eric is an amazing guy. He's the best brother a girl could ever have.
Yeah, he was saying on the forums that you guys are good friends.
Yeah. He
very cool.
Him and I have been really good friends. I spent Christmas with his family 1 year, my first year here in Connecticut when I wasn't able to go back home to Canada, because it was too expensive to fly home, and so he had me there, and I basically adopted his family. So we're tight.
Very cool.
He's a great guy. Brilliant.
Yeah. We definitely enjoyed having him on the show. Well, should we move on to the shakes of the week?
Definitely. I'm going to start off first. I'm doing a shake of ice and water tonight because I had my cheat meal tonight. I decided to have some pizza with some chicken on it. Just a nice, simple cheat meal, and I think this is almost a good sign that it's not agreeing with my stomach. I think I'm at that point where eating junk is just not agreeing with my stomach, so I'm not doing the show on the toilet this week, though, I swear. I know people are going to ask about
history.
That, so.
Yeah.
Oh.
Kevin has a history of running off to the bathroom during the show. We're like, where'd Kevin go? Suddenly you hear this microphone fumbling around. At least you don't take it into the bathroom with you.
Yeah, I mean, I promise if I go, you folks in the audience probably won't even know. I'll promise to edit it out so it's not distracting whatsoever.
Oh, that's awesome. It saves time, you know? You multitask. You get time on the phone, go to the bathroom, do laundry, you know.
Yeah.
Put it all together.
You won't be able to be so sneaky during the video podcast, though. You have to stick around for those.
That's a good point. Actually, I just picked up some videos, some tutorials on how to do some video editing for those. I'm going to learn how to do Final Cut, which is ridiculously hard to do, but hopefully I'll learn in the next couple of weeks so we can get that FitCast videos out to you as soon as possible, probably one every 2 or 3 weeks.
Excellent.
Cool.
Well, my shake this week, I had some watermelon left over from last weekend's barbecue. So I threw in some watermelon, a scoop of vanilla whey protein, and some Greens Plus. And it's not the best shake in the world. It's interesting. You know, the Greens Plus, I think, doesn't mix well with the watermelon. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's not disgusting. And maybe I'll gain a taste for it. You know, some of these super shakes or any shakes with Greens Plus, sometimes it takes a while before you're like, okay, yeah, I get it now. It's tasting okay. But yeah, my initial response to it was mediocre. But if anybody can figure out how to make a watermelon shake, I'd love to hear back from them.
You got to do watermelon with there's like a strawberry berry, what is it? Not designer protein, but oh my god, PVL protein, and it's pretty much the best way to make watermelon. It's like all berry-ish and kind of Hawaiian all at the same time. I haven't made it in a while.
Have any of you guys tried the fruit protein? I can't remember what the name of the brand is, but it's all...
Oh, like the Isopure?
Yeah. Is mm-hmm. that it? They make, like... I heard they're just, like, the best shakes, best protein powder to put in water.
No. I use True Protein. I use their hydrolyzed high-grade whey. That is my favorite protein to use. I've got gut problems, and it digests very nicely. And there's no bathroom visits for any reason, but I like TrueProtein.com. There's my little sponsor plug there. Cass runs on True Protein. I think we lost John there.
Yeah, I think we did lose John, but we're going to kind of keep going for a second. We're going to pause for a minute. We'll be right back with the FitCast. You probably won't even notice we paused, but we're going to wait for John to come back on.
Okay.
Looks like he just...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, what happened to you?
Sorry about that. My computer just went berserk on me. It just broke down. Had a lockup, so I had to reboot.
Oh.
That's the first time that happened.
Yeah, we cut to a commercial, so... Don't worry
okay,
about it.
Good. Good. For Rex Kwando.
Yeah, we did. we give oh, the Red Sox just lost, just to let everyone know.
Oh.
Damn.
No. It's like double whammy.
Seriously.
The computer breaks down and the Red Sox lose. Oh well, we can bring it back.
Lucky show number 13, guys.
Exactly.
Come on.
There we go.
Seriously, is that how it's going?
No. Okay, it's just one game. They're still getting paid a lot of money, and they're going to win later on down the road, so it's okay.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Exactly. Cool.
Wow. All
right, well, should we start off where we left off? I got cut off, I think, when I was just... I started to hear you, Cassandra, talk about using watermelon in a shake.
Yes, I was talking about there's a PVL brand of protein. For some reason, I cannot remember the name. I can see it in my head, but... It's just it's like a berry drink, and I think they have like watermelon in there as well. So
that'd
you can
nice.
Add that, and I would think if you did watermelon maybe with like diet yogurt, you know, yogurt with Splenda or something.
Yeah,
like
there
you know,
go.
To make it thicker.
Right.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I think the vanilla whey also sort of turned it sour. You know,
oh.
wasn't a good mix with the watermelon, but yeah, I think yogurt would be a better option.
Yeah, like a diet. Berry yogurt, and then a berry protein powder. And then Kevin was talking about the Isopure protein powder, like one of the fruit ones.
Yeah.
I haven't used them, but, you know, that would probably be good. We got to start
either.
Making shakes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm not blender-friendly, so... I like shaking rather than blending.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Do you have a shake with us today?
Mine is I'm doing the ice water, but I put lemon in my water. I had this talk with Bertie a while ago. We were like, how do we make people drink more water? And I said, put lemon in it. And it it does stimulate you to drink more water, because unless you've got a Brita or a really good filtered water, most water kind of has like an adverse taste, and most
yep.
you don't really want to drink it. So I put lemon in. That does it. Because I'm waiting for my lobster to cook. My boyfriend's going to cook up some lobster that we brought home from the Cape. And,
nice.
So I don't want to spoil it with a shake.
I hear you.
Well. I want to eat that whole lobster. And corn on the cob, that's what I'm having, yeah.
Did you have to kill the lobster, or did it come already dead for you?
Well, no. They're alive. They're in
okay.
the sink right now. They're alive. They're,
oh, cool.
they're not very active.
Yeah.
We had them in the cooler on the way home, and...
Now,
not moving around too much, but they're still alive.
Now, I cooked a lobster last year. You know, just living in the Midwest, you don't get a chance very often unless you're independently wealthy just to have mm-hmm. lobster. But you know, I felt bad because I got it and it was alive. And we took it home, and my roommate had a cat. And the cat was sort of playing around with the lobster for a while. So it was almost sort of a pet, you know. We made it claws and, you know, we... Yeah, it almost had a personality. It didn't, like, we threw it in this pot of boiling water. I just felt awful. I still feel bad to this day. Like, I killed this lobster. So,
don't play with your food.
Exactly. Don't play with your food is the key.
Yeah, don't make friends with your food, okay? You have a cow, you don't name it. You just have it in the field that eats grass and hay, and then you eat it. That's all.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, two waters and a watermelon shake. That should wrap up our shakes of the week.
I'll come back with something crazy next week, I promise. I'll think of something up. Maybe with some soda. We'll see.
I think we've exhausted the carbonated shake deal. I think Galia sort of hit the nail on the head with using sugar-free Red Bull. And you know, that was about the best it gets. The others, I fear, cause all kinds of gastrointestinal problems, as your first video podcast revealed.
Yeah.
Kevin did a video podcast of drinking various Diet Coke shakes after Lou Schuler was saying that he really wants to find a recipe that he can mix Diet Coke with whey protein.
Oh.
Of course, he was joking, but Kevin decided to bite the bullet and go ahead and give it a try.
And it didn't work?
Wasn't very good.
Yeah. I can't imagine missing protein and Coke could be good. Who would even think of that?
Lou Schuler.
Lou Schuler.
Yeah, well, Lou is an amazing man. But I think he was pulling your leg when he said to mix Diet Coke and protein powder.
Oh,
well,
sure.
He's like addicted to Diet Coke. So I thought, you know what? If you think about it, some combinations like the one we were hoping that would work out best was root beer and vanilla protein, and it was probably the worst one out of the bunch. But the one with Diet Sierra Mist and Optimum Nutrition Fruit Punch protein tasted pretty good. It just tasted like fruit punch.
Oh.
So if you ever want to take a chance, that's probably the one I shoot for.
Okay. I can tell you a good shake I have made. I used to work at a juice bar in my gym when I lived in Edmonton. It was fun. It was like the no-brainer summer job when I was writing my master's thesis. And I just went online here. PVL Whey Gourmet is the whey. And they have a pina colada. And you mix the two scoops of the Whey Gourmet, and you put in coconut milk and ice and pineapple. And I think I'd throw in a peach slice and a cherry. And you blend coconut extract, and you blend that all up. And
man, that sounds awesome.
Really good. Yeah, the pina colada. And we used to make, like, after eight, so you put, like... The PVL also has a chocolate chip mint, and we put Oreo cookie crumbs and peppermint extract and another scoop of chocolate protein powder, and it would make like a chocolate chip minty protein shake.
Man, that sounds good.
Yeah, when you work at a juice bar, you get creative. It's a lot of fun.
Do I hear somebody ringing on Skype?
Oh! I just noticed that. I was on the PVL website.
What's going on here?
I don't know.
He's ringing, but he's not answering.
No, don't worry, don't worry. It's a surprise for everyone in the audience who could hear that ringing. We have a special guest that's going to pop in for a minute. You can take a wild guess.
Special guest. The mystery guest.
We're related, but we don't look at anything alike.
All right, Eric, hold on. I'm gonna add you to the conference. All right.
What am I on for anyway?
Oh, just to say hi to Cassandra.
We're gonna
surprise her. All right.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. All right, Eric, you're on.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Eric
Cressy, welcome to the show.
What's happening? How did I get dragged into this?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, there's four of us. I didn't realize we could do this. This is the first time on the FitCast.
Yeah, I just got an email barrage from Kevin while I was here writing, so I figured I'd chime in and say hello.
Oh,
what's the topic
awesome.
Of interest here?
Well, right now we're talking about shakes. We just finished our shake section. We're about to move into the round table. So anything you want to hear Cassandra talk about?
Oh, man, she can talk all day. I'm just going to sit back and listen. How's that?
Oh, thanks, Eric.
I know her too well. She can go all day, no doubt about it, so...
Oh, come now.
Well, she's been keeping us entertained so far, but we've got a lot of good questions for her.
Hopefully she hasn't busted out any bad stories about me. Lord only knows, right?
No. It's all been good.
All right, excellent.
I would never say anything bad about you, Eric. I could tell you stories about you.
I can just imagine.
Yep. Our first, I went actually, the first time I met Eric, I came from... Canada to Connecticut. And I stayed over at his place, and we were supposed to live together. And I went into the bathroom to go use the shower, and there was the biggest spider in the world in the bathroom. And I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm moving in again. Like, I almost moved out when I saw that spider.
The funniest part was the ride from the airport after I picked her up.
Oh.
We hit it off right away, obviously, because we were talking so much that I got lost. I drove like an hour in the wrong direction. Like, oh, we're in Rhode Island. This isn't Connecticut, is it? So.
That was great. I forgot about that.
I actually did the exact same thing when Mike Robertson came out here from Indianapolis about 2 months ago, I think. I almost wound up in New York City, so sure enough.
You just get so enthralled in the conversation there. You forget where you're going, but you'll make it.
It's the Massachusetts driver in me. I'm supposed to be thinking about everything except for the road.
That's true. That's exactly true.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So, Eric, you're writing tonight?
I am. I got some deadlines this week, but anyway, I don't want to rain on your parade. So this one's all yours. So you guys have fun tonight. I'm going to sign off.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Get back
thanks
to work.
Thanks for dropping
right,
in,
care,
Eric.
Fellas.
Good to hear right. from you.
Good luck
have
tonight,
great
guys.
Day, Eric.
All right, take
thanks.
Care.
Well, wasn't that a pleasant surprise?
Yeah, very nice. We should have more call-in guests.
I tried to
more
set
often.
It up a little bit beforehand, but I guess Eric got the email kind of late, so I was going to have him. I kind of told Cassandra right before he called because I didn't think he was going to call. But that's all right.
He's great.
Yeah, good times. Yeah. Let's move into the roundtable because we got a lot of good questions.
Absolutely. We'll start off with the first question. This is actually a question I was very interested in asking. Last week, you were part of a T-Nation roundtable on low-carb diets. Can you give us a summary of what you discussed in the article, and specifically, what are your ideas on building muscle with low-carb diets?
Okay, well, I made some notes, because it was a very long article, and I hope everyone did read it, but I'll summarize quickly. I defined a low-carb versus a ketogenic diet. Now, those aren't the same. Basically, one is lower in carbohydrates than a typical North American diet. So really, any diet that consumes less than 55 to 60% of calories from carbohydrate is kind of defined as a low-carb diet, while the other diet is really low in carbohydrates but high in fat and not necessarily protein. So it enables you to produce ketones from the fat that you're taking in and also from the fat that's stored in your body. So I just talked about differences in that. And then I wanted to comment, actually, about ketosis. Some people think that, oh, yeah, you know, you restrict carbs, you're going to automatically have ketones in your urine, you're going to use those little keto sticks, and, ooh, they're going to be purple. Well, no, it is not that easy to get into ketosis. Some people do have a really easy time because they eat such a high amount of carbs that when they cut out even a little bit of carbs, they will produce ketones. But most people, if they have like a relatively good diet, even with healthy carbs, and it's a little lower than the typical North American diet, it takes more effort to produce ketones. So like, for example, myself, I could not for the life of me get into ketosis. I had to literally drink MCT oil to get into ketosis, okay? And it was really disgusting. So some people have an easy time, some people don't. But it does tell you that your body becomes better at recognizing fat as an energy source when you do get into ketosis. Mm-hmm. So and you burn more fat that way. You really do. And that's what
so on average, you think, what, about 50 grams or less of carbohydrates a day for ketosis? Or does it just vary wildly?
No, it seriously varies wildly. It does. It depends on the person. Like I said, if you normally take in a high amount of carbs, you will get into ketosis even with less than 100 grams of carbs. Mm-hmm. Like me, I've never really eaten many carbs, but I had to literally go down to like 20 grams of carbohydrate and drink oil to get ketosis. It was really, really crazy. My supervisor, Jeff Volek, he was like, "What? You're so weird." Like, I don't know. But one other thing is that even if you don't produce ketones in your urine, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not in ketosis, because over time, as you become used to a ketogenic diet, and this is never discussed in literature, which I'm going to write a paper about this, but over time, you see less ketones in your urine, even if you're on the exact same diet that you were at, like, day one of, like, a four-month ketogenic diet. And this is what we've seen in our research, that less ketones are detected because your body becomes better at using them. And then also you have like a higher threshold for ketones. So your kidneys will, they don't just automatically dispose of them. They actually recycle them back into the body. So don't ever feel inadequate if you can't produce ketones or if they go down after a while. It's not always like reduced intake or increased intake of carbs. And that's what a lot of times like these long-term studies on low-carb diets will say is, oh, yeah, they had less ketones in their urine at week 12. Well, you know, that's not just because they ate more carbs. It's because their body got better at using ketones. So anyway, that's a ketone thing.
for the listeners out there that aren't familiar with ketones, I mean, sort of what are they and why are they important?
Ketones are basically metabolic product of fat metabolism. So when your body is consuming, or when your body is receiving less glucose than it needs to support certain tissue functions, it mm-hmm. will take and produce ketones from fat, and it does this in the liver. So the fat gets broken down into a certain component and then another component, and then it becomes a ketone. And a ketone can be used as a fuel source by tissues such as the brain, which only can really use glucose. So it can't use fat, it can't use protein, so it has to make this thing called a ketone, and that's becomes a fuel. So it's like it's an alternative fuel source that's made from fat. It can't be made from protein, it can't be made from carbs, it has to be made from fat. So that's why fat intake is very important if you want to be in a ketogenic state. Okay, I'll stop talking about ketones. Now, Kevin really wanted to know what my ideas on building muscle with low-carb diets were. So I'll go to that, because if people want to know about all the advantages of low-carb, I can talk about that in a bit, but I'll address that topic. We just actually recently finished a three-month research project where we had guys either on a ketogenic diet or a low-fat diet for 3 months while they resistance trained. So we trained them 3 days a week. So I got up with them in the mornings and we lifted. And they would do things like squat, bench, deadlift, push press, calf raises, because we had to do that stuff, shoulder press. So all big muscle group exercises. Unfortunately, like these guys weren't trained enough to do like Olympic lifting or something, but they lifted hard. And the guys that were on the low-fat diet were eating less than 30% of their calories from fat and mostly carbs. Like, so they would eat, you know, like cereal and milk for breakfast, like typical North American, like low-fat breakfast. And then, you know, some sort of pasta salad for lunch and then some rice and, I don't know, maybe a piece of protein at dinner. I don't know, something like that. That's low-fat. And then the low-carb, it was all like eggs and oils and salads, and they had protein shakes that we gave them. And anyhow, and before and after their workouts, the guys in the ketogenic group had to have a half of a protein shake before their workout and a half of a protein shake after. And this protein shake was pure protein, and there was no carbs in it. So no insulin stimulation with high carb intake. And then the low-fat group, they had half of a Powerade, a small 12-ounce Powerade, before and a half after. Okay, so this is the premise to the study. So the guys on the ketogenic diet, they did that for 3 months straight. No variations, and they were all in ketosis for the whole time. And the guys in low-fat diet, same thing. They followed it for 3 months straight. At the end of the study, the guys in the ketogenic group all increased lean muscle tissue and dropped body fat. Where the guys in the low-fat group, they did increase lean muscle tissue, but not as much as the low-carb group. And one guy even gained body fat, but most of the guys in the low-fat group, they did lose some body fat as well. But the overall magnitude of the change is that there was, like, guys in the ketogenic group, one guy lost 35 pounds, another guy lost 27 pounds. And this was over a course of three months. And then the guys in the low-fat group, the average weight loss was about 10 pounds maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it was is that even without carbs, these guys were able to train very, very well, and they all improved performance because we did a one rep max test before and after the study, and the low-carb group and the low-fat group had the same increases in performance. So there was no detrimental effect of a ketogenic diet while weight training.
That's amazing.
The guys' bench went up by, it was 55 pounds increase in bench, and squat, it was 110, I think, increase in squat.
Sheesh.
So there's huge, huge increases. And it was the same for both groups, though. So, like, the moral of the story is you can lift and perform and sustain life and sustain brain function. These guys all work. Like, they're kind of, some of them are older guys, like 40 or so. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, they're not young students is what I was trying to say.
Right.
Like, these guys have jobs and you know, families and, you know, require children that they had to do things with on the weekend, and they still ate ketogenic, they still improved their performance, they had no negative effects to training, and they increased muscle and lost fat at the same time, and significantly more than the low-fat group.
That's impressive, and I assume that the calories were held constant between the two groups, and both were in a caloric deficit. Would that be right?
They were both in caloric deficits, and they chose their own calorie level. So we never,
okay.
It was a free living study. They were allowed to choose, but we made sure that, like, through diet record checks, like I checked their diet records every 2 weeks and made sure that they weren't eating too much, but enough so that they could still sustain life. Like, I never wanted any of them to starve, but
right.
I mean, they, and I would even say the low carb group ate more total calories than the low fat group because they actually had a supplement. They had drinks, and they had. We gave them bars as well. They had low carb bars. They had one, 3 times a week, and 2 shakes a day.
Hmm.
And there was, it worked well. They lost a lot of weight, gained a lot of muscle, and I'd also like to comment that it wasn't due to water loss.
Right.
We measured body water changes with a bioelectrical impedance spectroscopy. And we also measured changes in hematocrit, and there was none of it was due to water losses. Body water shifted because there was more muscle in the body at the end of the study, but there was no changes in water. And then we also made sure they were always properly hydrated before they got on the DEXA. So we didn't just, like, you know, measure weight and do, like, skin folds or something. It was all, you know, absolutes. So
it's really impressive. I mean, it sort of blows the common knowledge out of the water that low carb can only be used to, at best, hold on to what muscle you have and lose fat quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, it sort of, you know, shows that you can, in fact, gain muscle and train well with a low carb diet.
Yeah, and these guys loved it. Like, when they were done the 3 months, I was the person who did all the diet sessions for the low carb group, and they loved it. It was awesome. We'd sit down every 2 weeks and we'd do diet counseling sessions. And then at the end of the 12 weeks, they all wanted to stay on the diets. And they did. And I've been, you know, I'll check up with them. This has been a couple months that I've done with these guys. I'm on new guys right now. But the old guys, they're still eating that same way. And they said, I don't even want to eat any different. Like, they said, one guy had to go buy a whole new wardrobe, the guy who lost 35 pounds. But he was very happy with the changes. And, so that was the preliminary results. We're hoping to have, well, we will have 15 in each group. We have also a control group where there's no exercise. And in the low-carb, no-exercise group, they actually gain muscle and lose fat as well. It's just not to the same extent. And
right.
The low-fat, no-exercise group just loses muscle and fat, actually. So the low-carb group, and it preserves muscle tissue with weight loss, and it does that primarily through the higher protein intake versus, like, a typical North American diet, because protein intake stimulates protein synthesis through various metabolic pathways in the body, one called mTOR, which some people might know about. But so the sheer fact you're eating more protein than you would even, like, on a North American diet helps you to increase lean muscle mass even without exercise.
Now, what on average, I'm just curious, these guys on the high-carb diet in your study, Do you know on average sort of what percentage of their dietary intake came from protein?
Like the low-fat, high-carb groups? Yeah, they ate about 15% intake.
Okay.
15, 10. Yeah, but we never stressed that they shouldn't eat protein, and to make it a healthy eating pattern, I did say, focus on, eating a bit more protein because, that helps make you feel more satisfied. But we weren't really supposed to push it because we're following ADA guidelines, which say don't eat too much protein.
Right, right.
You'll kill your kidneys. So.
That's a fascinating study. Yeah. Well, it's sort of a segue into more questions from the users on the forums about this low-carb roundtable. Specifically, Chris Oss from Australia, I guess his last name is not really Oss, probably a screen name. But he asked for a sort of clarification on a few of the issues that you were discussing in this roundtable on the T-Nation. Basically, he wanted to know whether if you compared a low-carb diet to a moderate, healthy carb diet, or moderate levels of carbs that are healthy sources of carbs, would the low-carb diet be sort of victorious in the following areas? One, improving insulin regulation. Two, enhancing performance in athletes. And three, losing more body fat.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming he means by moderate healthy carb is something like a, I guess if you were to say food guide pyramid, which I'm not bashing the food guide pyramid.
No, it sucks.
If anyone actually,
at least the older one did.
Sucks.
The older one.
It
really
sucks in the macronutrient breakdown, but if someone actually followed the food guide pyramid, think about it. They do advocate whole grains and like so brown rice and whole wheat breads and I don't know. I'm not like a big fan of carbs, so I can't even think of carbs food right now. But if you look at it, they don't say go out and have a croissant for breakfast. And they don't go out and say to eat a Dunkin' Donuts muffin for lunch. You know, they do advocate kind of keeping it to whole grain. So, if people did follow that, they would be eating kind of healthy. But people don't even follow the food guide pyramid. It's just the breakdown in the food guide pyramid of it being like, okay, you should just eat carbs, 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 because, if you eat protein, you're going to overdo it and you're going to end up in the hospital. But the simple fact of the matter is we have an obese nation with diabetes and cardiovascular disease who eats a lot of carbs. So, where exactly are we going with this food guide pyramid? But okay, enough with that.
Yeah, I think we can assume that his healthy carb would be sort of, whole grains and vegetables, something like that, and legumes, something like this.
Okay. Well, now, for the first one, if I had to put them low carb versus moderate healthy carb in improving insulin regulation, the low carb diet would win. Now, the reason why the low carb diet is going to win is because a low carb diet has been shown, and he had asked me about this on the website, JP Fitness actually, and I posted some references to support what I had said. There's one by Manny Noakes in Nutrition Metabolism 2005. It shows that a low-carb diet improves insulin regulation more than a regular, even a moderate carb or higher-carb diet. And how it does that is by lowering the glucose response to meals. So you lower the amount of glucose always being infiltrated into the body. Now, glucose is technically a toxic substance, like to babies, it's a teratogen. Like if you have too much glucose, you will, destroy babies, for example. So it is.
That'd make a good t-shirt.
You will destroy your baby.
Glucose destroys babies.
We'll have that up on the podcast site later this week.
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, all those pregnant mothers, drinking Slurpees, you are killing your child. Different story. But a low-carb diet, it lowers the amount of glucose in your body, and then in the same sense, you don't need to secrete as much insulin to keep up with managing that glucose, because if there's too much glucose floating around in your body, it does. It damages tissues. That's why diabetics, they'll get like foot damage. I can't remember what it's called, but there's circulatory problems basically from having too much glucose floating around. So you lower the glucose, you lower the insulin, and therefore enhance insulin sensitivity. So if you're always, if you're keeping your glucose infiltration low by eating lower carb meals or low carb meals in general, then you will improve insulin regulation more than just like a healthy carb diet, even one that has legumes and whatever else you want to have in there. So now in terms of enhancing performance in athletes, now this is hard to address because there hasn't been very much research comparing like a moderate healthy carb diet to a low carb diet in athletes. And most athletes don't need to eat low carb unless they've got a weight control problem, which being in the university setting, I actually do see a lot of athletes with weight control problems because they have no idea how to eat healthy at all.
Right.
But I think if athletes ate a moderate healthy carb diet, they'd do well because they don't eat anything well. Like they go to, we got this place, DB Dough, and then we got Wings Over Stores. And I mean, the kind of food these kids eat, like one of the girls on the basketball team, she eats a box of Fruit Loops for breakfast. Okay? I'm not even joking. I asked her, I was like, just, I do study hall monitoring for the women's basketball team, so I get to sit in there and hang out and ask them what they eat, and they have no idea why I'm asking them, but I always am curious. But yeah, she's like, yeah, I eat a box of Fruit Loops for breakfast. I'm like, wow. Good thing you run up and down that court for 4 hours every day, okay? Because you would not look very good if you ate a box of Fruit Loops and you didn't run up and down the court. So, but back to low carbon performance. Just back in January, I attended a carbohydrate restriction conference. It was held in Brooklyn, and it was put together by Richard Feynman and Dr. Volek and all the low-carb gurus in the science world. And we had Astrup Jukundrup. If anyone's read anything by Astrup, he's a big name in exercise physiology. And he talked about carb intake and exercise performance. And I'm bringing him up because I'm quoting some of his notes. And he showed that basically, like, if you have a high-fat intake, which with zero carbs, like Eskimos, for example, they eat only meat. And there was a study in 1920s that looked at Eskimos and their performance. Like, I mean, these guys, they have to, like, build igloos, okay? They don't live in Canada, but...
they hunt caribou, too.
They hunt caribou, they hunt seal, and all they eat is meat and fat. And they have no performance issues. So carb availability is not a limiting factor for performance in their situation. They become habituated to a high-fat, low-carb diet. And that is the key thing, is that you have to become adapted to a diet for it to help you perform. The reason why carbs have always been touted as this factor for enhancing athletic performance is because of all the research that showed, like, back in 1925, for example, marathoners who ran the Boston Marathon had a decrease in blood glucose. So they thought, oh, glucose, that comes from carbs. That means that carbs probably are helpful for performance. So let's start advocating it. And then in 1967, there was the advent of the muscle biopsy technique for discovering glycogen in muscle. And so they concluded, well, there's carbs in muscle, and when you exercise, those carbs deplete. So you should eat carbs to become a good athlete. So, and then they started doing some research showing that carb feeding and fluid impacted performance. So the more carbs you took in, the better your performance were. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it's a quick energy source, and it is, and we are very used to eating a carb diet, so we've become adapted to having a high carb diet. But if you switch around your intake and you take in more fat and more protein, you become habituated to that, you become adapted to that, and your performance will not suffer. So if anyone who says, oh, I can't go on a low-carb diet, you know, I can't think, I can't do anything, my gym performance sucks, well, you haven't given yourself time to become adapted to it. How many years have you been eating a high-carb diet? What, 20, 30 years? Mm-hmm. And now you're going to just say, oh, I did a low-carb diet for 3 days and I couldn't work out, so I'm going to give up and it kills me? Well, that doesn't work. So in terms of athletes, if they want to adapt to a high fat, low carb diet, I don't think their performance will suffer. And there is some research, like Dr. Finney, he did, I think it was 1980. He did a fat study with adaptation, and he showed that performance wasn't decreased by high fat adaptation. And these were cyclists who did a high fat, low carbs, ketogenic diet for 6 weeks. And after 6 weeks, their performance didn't suffer.
I think that's a really good point. You're talking about the habituation issue. You know, just because modern Western diet is so habituated towards carbohydrate intake, it does suck when you go to a low-carb diet. You feel lethargic for the first few days, but then, like you said, your body adapts. And I'm sure the same would be true for, you know, the Inuits or the Eskimos. If you go up and fed them some Cheerios or even like a healthy carb oatmeal breakfast, they would probably have a huge insulin crash a little later and be laying around and couldn't do anything, you know, because they're so used to such a high protein, high-fat diet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, vice versa.
Yeah, and you have to look at what your body is going to use best for what activity. Now, I would have to say that if you're exercising at a very high intensity, like over 65% of your VO2 max, you might see performance decrements because carb is used. Like, you know, we see all the, you know, open up physiology, exercise physiology textbook, and you see at this percentage of your VO2 max you're using fats, carbs, protein, whatever, well, not protein, but fats, carbs, and over 65% VO2 max, you probably would have a decrease in performance. But most athletes, I mean, even basketball players, I don't see them working out at that high of intensity. And if you're a lifter, you're not working out really high intensity.
So what would we be talking about in the 65% range? Something like sprinters, 100-meter sprinters?
Over that, yeah, over that, like the 100-meter sprinters, like if you're running a race at a very high pace, or if you're racing in general at a very high speed, that's over 65%. But I mean, for most people who just go to the gym and work out, you're not usually working out at greater than 65% of VO2 max. Mm-hmm. So I mean, a low carb diet shouldn't hinder your performance once you become adapted to it. But if you're like someone, yes, like if you're, gosh, I'm not really good with athletes. I was going to say Ben Johnson, but dates myself. But, you know, a sprinter, you don't need to follow a low-carb diet. You do need carbs in that situation.
Right.
So it depends on your sport, and it depends on also on your body. I mean, we studied this one guy. He ate like a 90% carb diet, and skinniest, like, marathoner kind of guy ever. And we all thought he would die, but we did actually switch him over to a ketogenic diet for 8 weeks, and he died for the first couple of weeks, but he said after he was habituated, it took 6 weeks, his performance got better.
Really?
And he didn't like the diet, so he didn't want to stay on it, so it was more of a personal preference, but people were asking him what drugs he was on, and he's like, no, I'm not eating any carbs. They're like, how can you not drink Gatorade while you're riding or you're running or whatever, and he's like, I'm not, and I'm doing really well, so, and he actually got leaner. It was kind of sick, because he was pretty lean as it was.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, for the athletic performance question that Chris Off asked, that performance, I think most athletes could benefit from lowering the kind of junk carbs that they do eat, but if you compared a low carb versus a healthy carb, I think both would be good for the athlete, but they would just have to be educated on what to eat on a low carb diet so that they weren't restricting calories so much that they couldn't perform at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent. So the last part of his question, I think you've pretty much already answered the losing more body fat, sort of.
Yeah.
The low carb definitely wins on that one.
Yeah, and it has to do with the insulin regulation, because mm-hmm. insulin is one of the primary factors that allows us or inhibits us from grabbing fat from fat cells and using it for an energy source. So if insulin's always inhibiting LPL, which is an enzyme on the fat cell, if it's inhibiting that enzyme, you can't take fat out of the fat cell and use it for energy.
Right.
So, yeah, more body fat losses with a low-carb diet. Definitely.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, do you want to ask the next question from Milkman?
Well, actually, I was wondering if we could jump back to the first question. Just if I could ask you if you were having the people in the study do cardiovascular exercise as well?
No
cardio?
Nothing. They just lifted. for an hour on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings, and that's it. And they weren't allowed to do any cardio unless they were already doing it before they started the study, which no one was. They're very they're all sedentary people. That's what we were looking for, sedentary people, overweight. And some of them weren't even that overweight. Like one guy, he had, you know, only about maybe 15, 20 pounds to lose at most. But anyway, so no cardio, nothing.
And also, did you have them lift like 10 sets of three kind of, or was it more like three sets of eight to 10?
It changed throughout the 12 weeks. So there was a week of 5 reps, there was a week of 8 reps, there was a week of 10 to 12, and it would change all throughout the study. It was a training program developed by Dr. William Kramer, the man behind resistance training. So he basically helped us develop a really awesome program for helping build muscle with weight training.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, so no cardio. You don't have to do it.
Our Yay! Crowd just went, yes!
I think cardio is important for being able to do things, like do certain activities. I mean, I just took up road biking. And I'm a lifter, okay? So I get on this road bike, and I suck. But I've been working at it, and it's something I wanted to do. It's a challenge. You know, I love lifting, but I also want to be able to, like, hang with the group when I go on a road ride and not be like... Like, I showed up, and I'm, like, on my spandex outfit, and I'm like, oh, I'm in good shape. And I show up, and these riders that ride, which is really sad, have guts on them, and they drink these Gatorade shakes like they're nothing, and they're not in very good shape. And I show up, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to kick their ass. We went on this ride. I was so far behind the group. I felt like the biggest loser. I was like, I'm going home, and I'm going to stick my head in the toilet, okay? Because I am never saying anything about body composition and performance ever again. Because it's all about becoming efficient. Those guys are very efficient. And, you know, if you want to be good at something, you just got to keep doing it. So anyhow, but I do think cardio is important. Lung capacity, it does improve lipids, like it lowers triglycerides, increases HDL. So.
But if you just want to look good, it's not that important.
I don't know, some people may have saw that T-Nation article that was up a little while ago, it was fat figure. If you want to look like a figure athlete, yeah, you have to do a lot of cardio. But if you want to look good, you don't have to do much cardio. It's not that important. So you just eat low carb and weight train.
Cool.
Sounds good. Well, the next question comes from Milkman21, and he referenced an article debunking the widespread belief that saturated fats are correlated with heart disease. Basically, the article shows that the consumption of saturated fats have plummeted over the past several decades in America, replaced largely with vegetable oil. Yet, heart disease has increased dramatically. He asks whether this is just a...
Sorry, Kevin. I gave you a tricky question.
Is that spelt right?
Massaging.
Oh, I wasn't even reading. I thought you were trying to say messaging. All right. Massaging the data, or whether it's true that saturated fat might not be the bad guy in the fat family. I'm sorry, I didn't...
That's all right. I actually had that. I was just sort of brainstorming some questions and came up with that. That's more like a written question rather than a said question, if you know what I mean. But yeah, you get the point. You know, saturated fat, everybody used to think it was bad. This article shows that even though saturated fat has dropped over the past few years, our consumption of it, our heart health has gone down the drain. So, you know, what do you think, Cass? Is it true that saturated fat might not be the devil in the fat family?
Yeah, I'm a big saturated fat proponent. It's not the devil in the fat family. The devil in the fat family is trans fats. And a little history on the fat correlations is most of the research that has implicated saturated fat as the bad guy did so with feeding studies that tested like a saturated fat product that was in combination with trans fats, and this was before they ever knew trans fats were in the food. So they would take like a hydrogenated margarine, which was high in saturated fat, but it also has trans fat. These are feeding studies back from the 1950s. And that's where the whole thing where saturated fats were bad. And then more recent research, it does show that saturated fat does increase cholesterol levels, but it does so by increasing both HDL and LDL. And when it increases the LDL, the interesting thing is that it increases the size of the LDL. So there is also the total amount of LDL, but that the size. And if you want to think about LDL, small little LDL can get into your artery walls easier than a big LDL. Okay, it's sort of like sand through a strainer. Sand and rocks. You got sand is the small LDL, rocks are the big LDL. And when you eat more saturated fat, it increases the size of your LDL particles, and they can't get in your arterial walls, so they're less atherosclerotic. So saturated fat has been implicated with some negative changes, but it's not looking at the breakdown of what the quality of everything that's happening, so the LDL, for example. Saturated fat also, it depends on other components in the diet. A lot of studies that implicate fat and saturated fat as being a bad guy do so within a high-carb diet. So, like, they'll do feeding studies, and the cheapest food to feed people on a feeding study is, like, candy and soda. So to get calories up, you know, they'll have guys or women drink sodas, you know, for them to get 3,000 or so calories in a day. And so you interact sugar with fat, and you stimulate insulin, which tells you to store saturated fats, and those saturated fats can, you know, make up more of the membrane compositions and have a detrimental effect, like on insulin sensitivity. So this article that Milkman was referring to is right, and it is very true that a lot of the research, like the NHANES data, which is, how do I define that? Anyway, it's data that correlates food consumption in North America and patterns, and it has shown that there has been extreme increase in carb intake for the past 30 years, but there's actually been no change in saturated fat intake. And so even though fat has not really changed, yes, that's true, heart disease has gone up. And it's more to do with the carb intake than the fat intake. And then I am a proponent of saturated fat because in our research, like with ketogenic diets, people eat a lot of saturated fat. And the funny thing is that saturated fat really doesn't make up a really big part of your diet. And people say, oh, don't eat steak because it's got a lot of saturated fat. But the funny thing is a steak has more monounsaturated fat than it does have saturated fat.
Right.
And then the saturated fat in a steak is stearic acid, which is a neutral saturated fat, meaning that in research that has isolated it and tested on cholesterol levels, it doesn't increase cholesterol levels or increase cholesterol synthesis. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, we think, oh, we eat so much saturated fat if we eat meat, and you don't. It's actually more monos. And then also in the ketogenic world, even though they're eating a lot of saturated fat, we just came out with data, and I'm sharing this, and this hasn't been published, and we're going to do an abstract of this at NASO, which is the North American Society of Obesity. I can't remember what the other A stands for, but anyway, it's a obesity conference, and we've shown that even though people are increasing saturated fat intake by twofold, a ketogenic diet reduces both the percentage and the absolute amount of saturated fat in plasma triglycerides to a greater degree than a low-fat diet, despite having so much more saturated fat in the diet. And this is because when you eat a low-carb diet, you decrease fat synthesis. So instead of making fat and storing it in your membranes, you're always oxidizing fat and you're using it as an energy source.
Now, would this be regardless of whether or not you're eating more calories than you're burning, or you're eating fewer calories than you're burning?
Yes, because you're still a lot of it. It all ties back to insulin. Like insulin regulates fat synthesis and fat oxidation. So, control that. You have beneficial effects. Sorry.
Right. That's right. I was always sort of, you know, clear on, yeah, saturated fat, it's not bad for folks who are active or for folks who are not eating a high-carb diet, particularly if they're in a caloric deficit. But what if, you know, we all know it's not good to be sedentary and eat too much. It's not good either way. But what would you think? I mean, you have a lot more knowledge of the data than I do. If you took a couch potato who was eating too many calories on a low carb diet but eating high saturated fat, would they be any better off or any worse off than that same couch potato eating sort of a low fat, high carbohydrate diet?
Well, actually, that data I just read you was from couch potatoes.
Oh, really?
Who ate a ketogenic diet? They weren't in an exercise.
Wow.
So a ketogenic diet, even in people that don't exercise, is not detrimental for health. And
even with the saturated fats.
Even with the saturated fat. And like I said, the funny thing is we really don't eat that much saturated fat. High saturated fat foods are things like coconut oil, palm oil, pure butter. But how many people just like eat butter? Okay?
Oh,
you're
gonna
eat fat. Oh yeah.
Hey, it's a good cheat meal, you know? Just cut off a stick, you know.
Stick of butter.
It just melts in your mouth. Oh, if anyone ever did do that. Actually, you ever seen, this is another great part of America, is we have, what's that TV show, where they have those eating competitions, and they had to eat sticks of butter, and some guy ate 16 sticks of butter. And, everyone who's listening to this is going to hate me, but it's on Fox, so there you go. It's on Fox.
Well, you know what? If you're eating
when butter
a lot of
attacks.
Butter, you're getting a lot of CLA in your diet, conjugated linoleic acid, and CLA has been shown to decrease body fat and help increase protein synthesis. So
there
butter could be pretty good as well. Actually, it's funny. Last night at dinner on the Cape, I ordered swordfish and steamed vegetables, and it came with this butter compote, or I don't know what the heck it was, but it was like this big blob of butter on my plate, and I was looking at it like, okay, I have no problem with butter, but like a half a cup of butter really isn't necessary right now. So I just kind of ate around it. But it was, but really, like, people don't eat that much saturated fat. They really don't. If you use an oil on your salads, you're using like olive oil, or maybe some people nowadays are using Anova oil, that new DAG oil. But really, like, saturated fat intake, it's not detrimental, and no one really eats that much. It has more to do with the fact that people eat these foods that are combos of saturated and trans fats. Like, they'll go to the store, and, oh, God, especially on the East Coast. Kevin, you're with me here. Okay? Who runs on Dunkin's? America runs on Dunkin's.
There's
okay?
one on every other street. Seriously. I don't know. They have them on the West Coast, too, but not as many. But hey,
I'm scared of their coffee. It's amazing what they put in their coffee. You're talking about Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Their cream coffee, they have like this squirter where they squirt like heavy cream mixed with like liquidized sugar. it's like half the coffee is this horrible mixture, and the other half, yeah.
I wonder what's worse though, Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme, because those are creeping up here to the Northeast too.
I
don't see enough of those, so I haven't been exposed. But actually, it's a funny thing, you said heavy cream, John. Mm-hmm. One of the foods that our ketogenic people eat, our study subjects, and I've had this too because we do our fat load research with this, but you take heavy cream and you mix it with sugar-free pudding mixture, like powder, and you make pudding. And it's so good. So anyone who wants like the best dessert, and you don't get an insulin surge, and you really can't eat too much of it because it's pretty heavy, but oh my goodness, it tastes so good.
That does sound good. Well, it sort of relates to another question from Cappuccino on the forums. She was saying, you know, there's several types of saturated fats, like palm oil, animal fat, has some coconut oil. Are any of these and all of these healthy, or are there some that should be avoided?
Well, I don't think you need to avoid animal fat at all, but it depends on what else is in your diet and on your own personal preferences. Like, some people don't like eating skin off chicken if you don't want to, or you don't want to eat the fat on a nice piece of prime rib. Like, you may not want to, but it's not detrimental. Like I said, a lot of the fats that are found naturally in animal products, there's more monos and even some polys in animal products. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to cut it out if you don't want to. Now, coconut oil, I've never done, like, direct research with coconut oil, but I've read a lot about it, and, like, Mercola has this big thing on coconut oil, and just saying that it's, like, antimicrobial, and it's, I don't know, there's some other things. But, I mean, I don't really see too many people using coconut oil to the point where it's going to make your health bad or worse off than it would be if you were eating Krispy Kreme donuts.
Or even vegetable oil. Corn oil, for example, right?
I'm not, yeah. You know what oils I think are bad? Are soybean oil and corn oil. Mm-hmm. Like, those are just, why? Why eat soybean oil? Like, why?
I know.
It's like the crappiest oil. And you put, and where is it found? In salad dressings. So I don't buy it. I buy fat-free, sugar-free salad dressings, and then I use olive oil or anova oil on my salads, and that's what I use. Like, I will not buy, like, a commercial salad dressing because they use the cheapest, most, like, genetically modified oil you could possibly put in your body, and that's called soybean oil. Okay, now, palm oil. I have done research with palm oil. It was really cool, actually. I did, for my master's thesis, I did a feeding study where I had lard and palm oil, and I did diets that were high in lard, diets that were high in palm oil. And the palm oil I used was one called palm stearin, which is a fairly high saturated fat palm oil. But there's different types of palm oil. There's palm stearin and there's palm oleum, and that one's higher in mono and less in saturated fat. And the saturated fat found in palm oil is palmitic acid, which is C16O, has 16 carbons. And it was not cholesterolemic at all for the guys that I studied, but it did slightly increase cholesterol levels, but it did so by increasing HDL and LDL at the same time. So not all saturated fats are the same. Like palm oil, for example, there's all these different types of palm oil. You can't just say palm oil. If people really learned about palm oil, you'd have to move to Malaysia to learn about it because that's where they make palm oil. But the best palm oil is palm oleum, I would say, because it's a little bit higher in mono and saturated fat. It has 18 more oleic acid, 18-1 in it. And I really don't feel that, like I said before, that saturated fat should be banned. We
right.
really should ban sugar. If
right.
we want to ban something, and trans fats. Don't hydrogenate oils.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you should ban natural trans fats, so like the stuff that's found in dairy products, because that's the one that's like vicinic acid. Those aren't negatively implicated against like heart disease risk and whatnot. But it's like the trans fat that you, like oleic acid, that's made by man. That's very bad. So,
man-made monsters.
Man-made monsters. Yep. So I don't know if that answers Cappuccino's questions, but they're not the same, but they are the same in that they've been wrongfully accused.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have several other questions. I have a couple of options, you know. What are we? We're running like a little over an hour now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And my boyfriend just looked at me like, "You're gonna throw that lobster."
Exactly.
I'd like to. I think we should. We could do the last three, and I'll just be less. I'll talk less.
Okay, we could do that, or you know, we could do like a sneak preview, and you can come back on next week or the week after. Come back on soon and fill us in on all the news. But yeah, let's go ahead and fly through them.
Yeah, I
How
can fly
that?
Through those last three ones because I can't really say much about E. So Kevin can ask me, and then we'll see what's going on about that.
Okay. Deserve asked for a sneak preview of your new book with Lou Schuler. Lou talked about it a couple episodes back, and he's asking because he says his wife still has a hard time going against what has been stuffed into her head from years about the perils of women lifting. And I love to point at the magazines you see at Walmart at the checkout where it says like lose 8 pounds in 4 days and all this. I forget what I think it's like Perception magazine. It's known for that BS, but
no, my favorite magazine is Shape.
Oh, it's yeah, that's another good one.
Oh, because they put like the skinniest, most anorexic girls on there and be like, "Oh, I lost all this weight." And it's like, yeah, because you starved yourself to death.
I walked 5 minutes
a
day.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it drives me nuts. So, yeah, Lou contacted me back actually around Valentine's Day and asked me, he's like, "Hey, Cass, I don't know if you'll remember me. You know, I'm Lou Schuler, and, you know, we met at this conference and I want to write this book about women in weight training, and I think you'd be a great co-author. And I was absolutely flattered because this is Lou Schuler. Hello. He's like a god in the world. But anyhow, we have an excellent book coming out. It is going to be basically shifting the way women view weight training, and that if you want to look good, if you want to have better health, if you want to get rid of like flabby triceps or a shaky butt or a loose gut, it's all about lifting heavy. It's not about being on the crash trainer for an hour and a half or walking with your dog. Not like there's anything wrong with walking with your dog, but for hours on end and starving yourself. I've put together the diet plan for the book, and it's not restricted in calories whatsoever. It's healthy eating, and it's not a ketogenic diet either. It's a lower carb diet. Like, it's more kind of like a zone kind of diet. But women are not going to look at weight training the same. We're going to see a lot more women like squatting, deadlifting, like really going heavy, not picking up pink dumbbells, but actually like doing full body compound exercises. And Alan's doing the exercise program is totally awesome, and I'm working with Alan. I keep saying Alwyn, but it's Alan, and Alan. But he's a brilliant man when it comes to the exercise world. And
it's going to be the three of you in the book?
Yeah, Alan's
awesome. Awesome. So
he's doing the training. I'm doing the diet. Lou's doing the writing, and we're putting it all together. And it's I've been looking at our proposal, and Lou he's made it entertaining, and that's a beautiful thing. Like, if anyone's read The New Rules of Lifting, you laugh your butt off. Actually, laugh your ass off, okay? While you're reading the book, but you learn so much information. He is amazing. I'm so
absolutely
honored to be working with Lou. But women really need to know that they should lift heavy. Not going to get big if you bench press 135 pounds. I weigh 120 pounds, and I lift heavy. I have a bad back as well. I have a broken spine, a spondylolisthesis, and I deadlift. And my doctor said to me one day, he's like, you work out too much, you shouldn't deadlift, blah blah blah, I shouldn't do this. No, lifting has pretty much saved me from being a vegetable. So mm-hmm. I wish more women would weight train, and this book will hopefully be something that Deserve's wife will absolutely love. She'll be entertained.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait for this to come out to give it to all my friends too, because it just drives me crazy, the mythology surrounding women lifting.
Yeah, you don't want to get too big, too bulky. I am not big or bulky whatsoever, and I lift really heavy all the time, and I hardly do any cardio. If I want to get leaner, I'll do a little bit more cardio, like I'll run in the mornings, but I like lifting. Or I would do the road riding, which I've been trying to do, but I suck. My road bike is expensive, and so I use it as much as I can, but that's not even much.
Well, I just got some good news from you, and you told me, Cass, that you've been awarded a dissertation fellowship from the Egg Nutrition Center. And first of all, congratulations on that. That's an awesome award.
Thank you.
I just kind of wanted to pick your brain for a minute, if you could tell us what the premise of your research is going to be.
For my dissertation project, hopefully we're going to be starting in January, I'm going to do a controlled feeding study. And I don't know why I'm doing another feeding study, because I almost wanted to kill myself in my master's when I did a feeding study. But it's really hard. It's like I'd get up at 6 in the morning and I'd cook till 2 in the afternoon straight. It was deadly. But I'm going to do a ketogenic diet, and I'm going to alter the quality of fat. So I'm going to look at a ketogenic diet high in saturated fat, and I'm going to compare it to a ketogenic diet high in polyunsaturated fat. And then I'm going to then do another one to compare a ketogenic diet high in saturated fat in combination with the recommended intake for omega-3 fat. So make sure there's a good balance in the diet between N6, N3, and saturated fat.
Nice.
And we're going to look at plasma membrane fatty acid composition. We're going to look at cholesterol ester fatty acid composition and triglyceride composition. And that we hypothesize that with all of both the low-carb diets, there's going to be a decrease in inflammation and an increase in insulin sensitivity. But with the addition of the omega-3s with the high saturated fat, there's going to be even more decreased inflammation and more increase in insulin sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to have a group of the high polyunsaturated with a more balanced omega-3 to omega-6 ratio? Or how is that group going to look, the high polyunsaturated?
The high polyunsaturated, it's going to have the high saturated and high polyunsaturated fat was going to be our original project. Unfortunately, I had to limit myself to three groups because of time and money constraints. Mm-hmm. But if on down the road, I would do a polyunsaturated with N3. But the reason why we're doing this is because both Jeff and I, we wrote a paper a little while ago that basically said that there shouldn't be any restrictions on saturated fat when you're in a ketogenic state. And like I said, that goes back to all of our research that we've been doing with ketogenic diets and people eating a lot of saturated fat and still having all these major health improvements. So we're just trying to prove that no matter what type of fat you have in the diet, you don't if as long as carbs are restricted, you're okay. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, there was a paper that came out a couple months ago that said that, you know, eat a ketogenic diet, but, oh, make sure you watch out for saturated fat. But if you watch out for saturated fat, you limit the amount of foods you can actually eat. And mm-hmm. too much polyunsaturated fat, like omega-6, that has negative implications as well. So we're just trying to show that saturated fat shouldn't be the bad guy. And that's what this feeding study will be. And you know, there's going to be more. That's what research is. This is the first step. No one's ever done a feeding study with ketogenic diets. No one's ever looked at fat quality. And that's what I always wanted to do when I came here to work with Jeff, is like look at what does fat quality matter?
Right. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So give me a year and I'll give you some data. Cool. I just got to do the study first.
Sounds good. Well, we got one more question, and we should point out that you're not just some bookworm who just talks the talk, but you also applied your training and nutrition knowledge to yourself. Can you tell us about your fitness competitions and what you do to keep yourself lean and healthy on a regular basis?
When you said I've applied training and nutrition knowledge to myself, I always joke I've tried every single diet out there. I used to be like, I've tried vegetarian. I tried Fit for Life, which was like, they were like the most crazy vegetarian people in the world. I've tried the extreme low-fat diets. I've tried ketogenic diets. And basically, I found that the best thing to do is eat well. I think Barati's put it this way. Eat well 90% of the time. And then if you want to have like a 10% day where you kind of have whatever you want, you can still be lean and healthy. For fitness competitions, you have to be a lot more strict. Really, really control. Sorry, my boyfriend just stuck a lobster in the door. He's like, dinner's ready. We're having lobster for dinner. That's on the good diet. There's nothing bad about lobster.
Is the lobster still alive? Is he playing with the lobster?
No, he killed it. It's steamed. Okay, it looked red to me. It looked pretty good, too. But for fitness competitions, I did fitness competitions 2 years ago. I haven't done them since I've been here in Connecticut. They are really hard to do. It takes all your time and energy. I tried doing it while I was writing my master's thesis. Don't ever, ever try to write a thesis or do a dissertation and do a fitness competition. That's all I have to say. But I do. I stay lean and healthy, and I hopefully am a role model to my friends. Like I basically call myself a food snob, because like this weekend, for example, I was at Cape Cod, and you know, we're at the beach and everyone's eating, you know, they're having cookies and there's pretzels, and you know, they were drinking, beer. They were drinking beer. They were drinking beer, and I was drinking water, or I had Diet Sprite, and then I was eating beef jerky, and I had my walnuts, and I eat like that all the time. And then at, you know, this is what we did during the day at the beach, and then we went out for dinner, and people would have like a big plate of fried clam strips, and I ordered the swordfish, and I had steamed vegetables, and then they went to ice cream, And I was thinking about this, and I was like, we didn't even do much activity today, but you're still going to go have ice cream. And they're like, oh, shut up, Cassie, we eat good all the time. And so they ate ice cream, and I just sat there and I drank water. And I'm a food snob, but at the same time, I also don't want to get to a point where I have to lose a significant amount of weight at any time. I like maintaining like the same weight level all times. And right. I don't miss things like ice cream, or I don't miss things like fried clam strip, because they don't taste good. Like Kevin said, you know, he had the pizza and then your stomach's upset. Yeah. And you do. Your body gets really good at knowing what's good for you and what's not. And when you start eating crappy food all the time, you get used to that. And just a quick story. I had one guy in one of my ketogenic studies. He found out he actually had diverticulitis by switching to a ketogenic diet, because he was eating carbs and just basically pasta and flour products that were coating his gut for so long that it was masking all of his symptoms. But when he finally like flushed out his system and really cleaned things up, his symptoms came to the forefront, and he stopped it before it became something as bad as colon cancer.
Wow.
So, you know, your body knows what's good for you. So basically what I do to keep healthy and lean is I work out regularly. Like, I like working out about 5 days a week. And then when on the weekends, like, I'll do yard work, or like this weekend I went to the beach, and we didn't do anything yesterday, but today I was like running through the water and then swimming. I swam for a half hour straight in the salty water, which is so gross, but I just like to be fit and be active and have a life. You know, I don't limit myself from having fun, but I also just think what's good for me. You know, does that taste good now? What's going to do to me tomorrow or half an hour from now when I'm in the bathroom?
Right.
Going,
exactly.
Oh, why did I eat that?
Oh, I think everyone out there that's listening to this should pat themselves on the shoulder for, I mean, like Cassandra brought up, sometimes your friends will be like, oh, why are you always eating like that? Like, I get that all the time. Like, if you're going out and if I go to a restaurant, like, it might be just like a chicken Caesar salad with no dressing, I'd be like, why don't you live a little? I do live. I'm breathing and such. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's just hard for people giving you a hard time about what you're eating, and it's not like, well, at least I'm not doing heroin or something. It's not. It can't be that bad, you know.
Yeah. And you really don't miss it when you're eating healthy, and when you don't eat healthy, then you do crave the crappier foods again. You know, if you're eating Trix cereal every morning, then you crave Trix cereal or whatnot, and you think it's always going to be that way, but it's not. If you switch over to a healthier eating lifestyle, then you don't want to eat crap in the morning or any time during the day.
No, you don't. Yeah.
Well, it's been an awesome interview with you, Cass, and we sure enjoyed you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you guys. This is fun.
Absolutely. Come back anytime.
All right. Yeah, well.
And soon.
I'll do a little surprise phone call on Eric, or perhaps when Alwyn's on, we'll do a little chatting. You can ask me how my workout program's going that he's given me. So,
very cool.
See how I'm sticking to it.
Well, that will pretty much wrap it up for this week's episode of the FitCast. As you could see, it really was lucky episode number 13 with the little mishaps that we did have, but it all worked out. It was a great episode, and again, I want to thank Cassandra for coming on the show. And
thanks, Cass.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, it's good. It was a great show. And don't forget, we're going to have Alwyn on next week. Cross your fingers. I'm going to be emailing him, and I'll keep you updated on the fitcast.com and through the newsletter. So don't forget to sign up on that. And that's pretty much it. Don't forget to get, you can get all the articles that we talked about this week on the show on the fitcast.com and all the show notes. That's pretty much it. And for the FitCast, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And I'm Cassandra Forsythe.
Now go eat some lobster.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm craving it right now.
We'll see everyone.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you. And we'll see everyone next week on the FitCast.
Maybe he had a bathroom run.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that watermelon went right through him. Wow, John, we'll have to ask him a couple questions. So, John, how was that watermelon?
It's
very diuretic, was it?
Have you ever been to Southside?
No, I haven't. I asked him if I could come there, and he's like, well, I don't know. Kind of hardcore. You know, you're not really like a big, burly girl. And I'm like, dude, I can squat more than most women. He's like, nope. I don't know. I don't want to impose. And that was like last year when he was kind of new, but I could probably get in there now. I just probably have to shave my head and, wear a bandana and be like, oh, I'm so hardcore. I'm going to bench.